Chapter 61 Iron Keep. The Shalane, Merel, Dacen and Cadean huddled under piles of blankets for warmth, as the weather had turned unexpectedly cold during the last 2 weeks of travel. "It will only be a few more days, I suspect, Highness," Dacen comforted the troubled queen as the wagon crept along the snow-buried road. If possible, the conveyance chosen for them felt even more dark and cheerless than the carriage Regent Ogbeth had designed for the journey to Eldaluri Mora. The Shalane regarded her protector and thought she should feel grateful that Padre Aethon had permitted any more of her personal guard to remain with her at all. Wrongly, Aethon wrote off Jen's attack as a consequence of prophetic destiny, and Jaren's as a result of Jen poisoning his mind against the Ha'ulric. Since both men had acted while in her protectorship, she initially thought Aethon would dismiss all the Dark Guard in favour of the Elderfair. But then again, with Shatan dead, the only person who had ever treated her with egregious disrespect could no longer trouble those loyal to her. Since they rose that morning, the snow had fallen steadily, the wind sometimes gusting and driving the chill powder through the slim, barred openings on the sides of the wagon. What time it was, the Shalane could not guess, the sky an immutable grey from sunup to sundown. The snow had drifted up high on the boles of the trees which were thick along the side of the road, slowing the growing caravan in its progress. Aethon saw to it that every man-at-arms who could survive a brutal winter march lined up to accompany their wounded king and his anxious bride. Out of the corner of her eye, the Shalane caught Dacen staring at her, and she stood and crossed to the back of the wagon to escape his scrutiny. While appropriately noble and caring, the Shalane noticed another emotion in his eyes, a hope and anticipation that frightened her. So many emotions and confused thoughts strove within her that she wished Dacen as dull and expressionless as Jen had been in his early days in her service. Her love for Jen easily eclipsed her girlish infatuation with the Prince of Tolnor, though she dreaded the thought of telling Dacen outright that she felt nothing for him at best. At the worst, her association with Jen had, in her own mind, transformed her handsome protector into a babbling, fawning nuisance. But gazing upon the snow-washed track behind her and the other dark wagon trailing theirs shoved these thoughts away, for within the other wagon lurked the instigator of all her twisted confusion. Shatan was dead. After Jaren had killed him, Padre Aethon had the Elderfair immediately remove the new king from the festivities under the pretext of ministering to him. A while later, the Padre had returned and told the mass of squelched revellers that their king lived, but had sustained a serious wound that the Shalane had healed to the best of her ability. For security's sake, the entire party left at once despite the late hour. The Elderfair had executed Jaren by fire just before the caravan got underway, and the Shalane could not bear to watch. Once underway, Aethon told them that his brethren had cast spells to maintain Shatan's body fresh, hinting that there were still options, though the Shalane saw none, save choices between modes of interment. But Aethon kept up the farce. Servants delivered 3 meals a day to the dead man, church leaders consulted with him regularly, and the Shalane had been permitted to visit her husband every other day to spend time to heal and condole her beloved lord. For her part, sitting with his corpse only agitated her. Never before had horror and absolute relief had such intimate intercourse in a human heart, though she chastised herself for the relief. Relief to be rid of Shatan sprung from a selfish, short-sighted root. The horror, more justly, grew from the consequences of his demise that now stared the unsuspecting world in the face. While no one, including Jen, thought Shatan would have fared well against Mikik, no one had any clue as to how the prophecy would get along without him either. Even more confusing was the question of leadership. How long would Aethon pretend that Shatan still drew breath? Cynically, she realized that Shatan's death bestowed a great deal of power upon Aethon, for in the king's absence, the Padre commandeered all of his responsibilities, all under the guise of his being spokesman. Of course, Shatan had acted as little more than the Padre's puppet when alive, and of the two, Aethon was the stronger leader. A shout rose and the caravan stopped to rest and feed the horses at midday. The Shalane hoped Dacen was accurate in his assessment that the end of their trip approached. The long journey through Ogmere wearied her, and she hated the thought that innocent men perished in the cold to protect a dead man. While she had learned that Ogmir consisted mostly of dense wood, she was not prepared for the boxed-in, blind feeling of travelling down a road so thick with trunk and branch that only a formidable choked darkness waited beyond the edges of the road. In places, the trees hunched over the road for long stretches, creating dark, sylvan tunnels as cold and forbidding as caves of stone. While the original plans for the caravan had them passing through major cities and towns on their way back to Shatan's stronghold in Iron Keep, Padre Athan ordered that Jen's leg and the accompanying narrative of the events in Elder Luri Mora travel the circuit instead. To the churchman's consternation, General Cairn and Ethris had turned up missing the second night from the portal gate, and no one had seen Maywen since before Shatan's death. The Shalane quizzed her mother about it, but Mirel simply returned one of her smiles that told her it was safer not to inquire. Athan passed nearby with two pure men to deliver lunch to the corpse. She figured the pure men who served it also ate it, perhaps using Shatan's shroud as a napkin. She suspected those in the robes of servile pure men walked a little too much like soldiers to be holy men, crediting her ability to perceive such a detail to Samian, who continued to instruct her in the ways of the sword in her sleep. The Shalane felt awkward about the training at first, strutting around a dream cathedral, sparring with a teacher she could rarely understand, and using a weapon she had only seen in the hands of men brought a blush of embarrassment to her face every night, until her steps and strokes fell with more surety. As her confidence and skill grew, with an alacrity she found startling, she found her nightly instructions a great release, especially since in dream her stomach was not sour or expanding. Once the horses were fed, the caravan proceeded forward, heavy flakes swirling in a whistling wind. Cuddling up to her mother, she fell into a deep sleep until Dayson woke them all with a shout. "We've arrived!" They crowded around the bars to stare out, finding nothing but a white plain surrounding them. The lack of trees allowed the bitter wind to ply its full biting power, and soldiers around them wrapped raw faces with whatever cloth they could find, and walked with arms folded and faces to the ground. "How can you tell we're there?" the Shalane asked. Dayson cocked his head to reply, but Cadean butted in before him.
"The land around Iron Keep is kept free of trees for at least 2 miles in every direction, though I've heard they have extended that area under Shadan Cairn. With all that wood you could bring an army in from any direction, though it would be difficult going if the forest is as dense as it appears. It shouldn't be long now, Shalane."
The Shalane remained at the bars, surveying what she could in the obscuring snow. Before long, a regiment of horse soldiers added to their numbers. Inside an hour, people started to line the road, cheering the return of their king and undoubtedly wondering where he and his father were. The weather and the lack of anyone important to see likely rendered the event a little less festive than it was intended to be, and before long the caravan rolled through an immense gate and into Iron Keep proper.
"But there was no city. Is the entire city inside the wall?"
Dayson asked, astonished.
"There is no city, inside or out," Cadean explained. "This place was chosen as the location to build Iron Keep because there are several portals that converge in this general area. This is purely a military complex with some areas dedicated to portal pass-through for trading purposes. The Shadan lives on the Elena Shard, though I doubt Athan will let us winter there. There will be a few creature comforts here, though we are the first non-Ogmarians to come within these walls in at least 100 years. Not even ambassadors are permitted to enter here."
"Well, if I were to attack it, I would simply bring along torches," Dayson commented. "I thought Iron Keep would be primarily iron, but it appears mostly wood banded with iron. A good blaze would fell this place in a day."
"Each spring they treat every inch of every beam and plank with some substance, so it won't burn,"
Cadean explained, clearly fascinated by what he was seeing.
"I hope they give us a chance to wander about when the weather clears up. We could use some good intelligence about this place."
But Cadean's wish was not to be granted. To the Shalane's dismay, Athan's graciousness ended as soon as they disembarked from the carriage and entered the dour, formidable hall. The Shalane barely had time to gaze at the cavernous room before Cadean and Dayson collapsed to the floor as a result of some spell from any one of the multitudinous churchmen thronged about them.
"Athan," Mirel barked, "just what do you think you're doing?"
The Elderfair wasted no time dragging the unconscious men from the room.
"I am removing potential threats to the prophecy. While I do not have direct evidence that any of them have done anything that merits detention, the Dark Guard do not hold a high place in my trust at the moment. Captain Tolbrook and the others will join them as soon as they arrive as well, and the rest of Rugothian soldiers will be sent home as quickly as possible. Fear not, however, your guards will be unharmed, though I'm sure I have affronted their honour rather gravely." The Shalane gritted her teeth and bit back an acerbic accusation as Aethryn continued. "As for you, Mirel, I'm afraid that you too have guarded my mistrust, and therefore you will be confined to your quarters under guard for the duration of your stay." "Word of this will get out, Aethryn, and there will be a price," Mirel warned him. "I am only doing this for your protection, of course. The road, as I recall, was particularly inhospitable to you, and your new king could hardly stand by and see his mother-in-law put in peril."
"And what of me?" the Shalane jumped in. "Are you going to lock me up as well?"
"For now, at least until we can deal with the issue of Shatan."
"Deal with the issue? He is dead!"
"Keep your voice down, Highness. There is hope yet." The Shalane couldn't fathom what trickery Aethryn possessed that could revive her dead husband, but she hugged her mother before soldiers escorted Mirel out a side door, and the bulk of the churchmen left to attend to other duties. Only Padre Aethryn and two Elderfair remained behind. The church soldiers were both tall, blonde, grim, and exactly identical in their appearance. "These two," Padre Aethryn announced, indicating the two stiffly bowing soldiers, "will be your new protectors. They are loyal to the prophecy first, and then to you, unlike some of your previous guards. Their names are Adren and Braddon, twin brothers of a devout woman who lost her husband recently in one of Joran's explosions in Mickmere. They are your countrymen, so I thought them a good match for you. I have also arranged for a new handmaiden for you. She should be... Ah, yes, there she is." The Shalane turned toward the rear of the hall. An unveiled woman with raven black hair and dark eyes approached them, escorted by two veiled girls in plain brown dresses. The unveiled girl was confident in her bearing, though she approached the Padre tentatively after bowing to the Shalane. Her eyes darted about quickly as if searching for someone.
"Lady Cairn, this is Mina, one of Torbrand's daughters." "Where is your veil, Mina?"
Padre Aethryn asked.
"I thought my father would be here. He commands me never to wear it in his presence. Is he nearby, Your Grace?"
"I am afraid your father turned up missing a couple of weeks ago. You will wear your veil, as is custom among your people." Mina curtsied.
"Thank you, Your Grace."
"Show the Shalane to her chambers. She will be kept there for her safety for the next several days, as we work out all the details to guarantee her security and that of the Ha'orik." Mina curtsied again.
"This way, Highness. You will have my room, and I will take the one next to yours." "I don't want to displace you," the Shalane said as they left the entryway of the hall and proceeded down a dark hallway,
the twins following at a discreet distance.
"Whatever I am given after the last several months will be a luxury. A comfortable bed and a warm fire are all I will insist upon. If you'll forgive me, you seem a bit anxious. Is something wrong?" "There are some people I was expecting, hoping to see. They were a part of your dark guard, I believe. To own the truth, I wanted to see my husband." "You have a husband among the dark guard?"
the Shalane asked incredulously.
"It was a particular arrangement of my father's," Mina blushed. "After he conquered Tolnor, I was given to Gerund Kildan as wife. Did he never mention it?" "I'm afraid not, though I had little conversation with him as he wasn't one of my protectors."
The tears welled up in Mina's eyes, and she turned away until she could force down the emotion.
"Then Jen was right," she finally said. "Gerund must despise me as a matter of honour."
"And you've spoken to Jen? This woman is full of surprises."
"He never mentioned me. I assumed, since he is your protector, that he might have brought up his visit to the Elene Shard." "He didn't. He was very miserly with details about his past." "And where is he and the rest of your dark guard? I should think from the stories that Mikik himself couldn't drag that man from your side. And where is your husband? He so coveted Torbrand's throne that I expected him to sleep in it for at least a week after returning."
The Shalane smiled wanly and checked the anemone in her pocket.
"I have much to share with you, Mina, but perhaps when we are alone. I'm afraid, however, that most of what I have to say is not pleasant or hopeful."
Mina nodded, face glum, and they proceeded through the hallways in silence.
While the Shalane was grateful to be indoors, Ironkeep presented a sharp contrast to her home in Mickmere. Her mother's hall reflected art, refinement and beauty, whereas Ironkeep's theme centred around trophies and strength. The entirety of the structure was wood, and it felt like a sprawling lodge. Weapons of all varieties hung from the walls, intermixed with animal heads and various appendages of defeated enemies. Red carpets covered the floors in the public areas, while the natural wood of the floor was left bare in the living quarters save for a few plain rugs. During the following week, the Shalane found herself in company with her new handmaiden almost constantly, and she decided that she liked the young woman. Her feelings for Geraint revealed a tender, romantic heart, while her conversation demonstrated a maturity, intelligence, and self-command. The Shalane told her what had happened during the journey to Elder Lurimora, hiding her own feelings for Jen and his identity as the Ilk. In turn, Mina related Jen's visit to Elene to her, providing more insight into a time Jen rarely spoke of. Mina told her a few days later that Padre Aethon had spread the word about Jen in the immediate environs around Ironkeep, and the Shalane vehemently denounced his actions as the most vile and baseless slander. Mina took her side of the story without question. Ogmerians, it seemed, held the church and its leaders in low esteem, and had long suspected them of all manner of trickery and political manoeuvring. True to his word, Aethon, faking commands from Shirtan, ordered the Shalane into seclusion. Only Mina was allowed traffic in and out of the Shalane's chambers to serve her needs, though she proved adept at teasing information from guards and other servants about the keep and delivering it to the Shalane. From what Mina could gather, Aethon had ordered the entire council of Padres to haste to Ironkeep, though bad weather and distance would delay their arrival for some time. Aethon kept Mirella under the same restrictions as her daughter, again for the ostensible reason of keeping her safe. But while the Shalane at first found Aethon's measures to be punitive, she realized that her own seclusion was part of a larger plan to keep the secret of Shirtan's death, for if the Shalane were allowed to wander the halls of Ironkeep, then why wouldn't Shirtan be afforded the same privilege? And from what Mina told her, speculation about the absence of the High King mounted daily, while the nature of Ogmerian culture provided the Shalane the cover of unimportance. As the days rolled slowly by, the Shalane busied herself with reading and playing games with Mina. Against all odds and deepening snow, the Padres trickled into the keep by ones and twos, and at the end of 3 weeks Mina reported that the entire council had arrived and had met in seclusion for 2 days straight. The Shalane could only imagine their consternation and bewilderment. What does one do with a dead Ha'ulric? The Shalane could only think of two possible options. They could have faith that the baby growing in her slowly expanding belly would redeem them without the Ha'ulric's help, or they could find a suitable lookalike for Shirtan and let the charade begin in earnest. The next day, one of her guards, Adren or Braddon, she couldn't tell which, knocked on the door and informed her that Aethon had summoned her to meet with the council in an hour. So they have come to some decision, have they? She thought. While inwardly disdainful, excitement welled up within her at the prospect of knowing anything about how the next months would play out. Aethon had seen to it that properly noble attire was delivered to her shortly after her arrival, though to her dismay it was all white. She found the most ostentatious outfit of the lot and donned it quickly. Once ready, she followed between her two protectors as one led the way and the other brought up the rear. Serving women, veiled and young, ogled her as she strode by, whispers blooming behind her. Adren and Braddon led her back into the great hall and then up a flight of stairs to a large assembly area accessed through a pair of enormous doors that creaked wildly as they were opened. The room itself was unpleasant enough. Ironkeep had no glass for windows, so most of the shutters in the room were shut, the only light emanating from a roaring fire at one end of the room and a set of braziers glowing orange. A slight haze hovered about the room as she entered and walked steadily toward a long table on a plum-coloured rug in the centre of the room. The council rose at her approach, regarding her with curiosity. I wonder if Aethon has poisoned them against me or told them of our little bargain. Aethon signalled for her to sit next to him at a finely appointed chair set at the corner of the head of the table where he presided. Books littered the table along with parchment and quills, although from a quick glance it appeared they had all turned whatever notes they had been writing upside down to not attract her scrutiny. Once she had seated herself, the screeching doors boomed shut, leaving her alone with the council.
"We thank you for coming, High Queen," Aethon said. "I trust your needs have been adequately met these past few weeks."
"Yes, thank you."
Aethon sat and the council followed suit.
"Very well. Let's get to the matter at hand. So you know, we have warded this room against prying ears, so that we may speak freely. I have spent the last 2 days informing the council of every detail of our journey, including my feelings about Jen, your actions, and the actions of your mother. I have also informed them frankly about Shirtan's death, and we have spent the greater part of the last day discussing what options are available to remedy this."
"Remedy?" the Shalane exclaimed. "We must tell the people the truth. I know it will cause panic, but you cannot hope to carry on this ruse indefinitely. I know you trust your Elder Fair and the churchmen under your control to guard this secret, but it will get out, if it hasn't already."
"We agree," Aethon answered. "Rumour and suspicion already ply their corrosive trade within Iron Keep, and with Ethrys and Torbrand loose, I fear what weeds of dissent they may be sowing. Perhaps you know where they have run off to."
"I'm afraid not," she answered truthfully.
"I didn't think so. I will have to pay a visit to your mother for that, I suspect. At any rate, we have brought you here to inform you that we believe there is a way to restore your husband to life and set the prophecy back on course."
"What? No one has had power to raise the dead since Eldiloth. Do you think I could do it? If you do, you are mistaken."
Aethon stood and paced around the table.
"There are a great many mysteries that were forbidden to be spoken after the death of Eldiloth. Knowledge dark and evil that would only serve to foment corruption and strife if it were known. What I am going to tell you now, only those who are accepted into this council are permitted to know. We have had some debate about whether to tell you at all, but I believe it important that you understand so that you can help us. Before I do, I wish to have your word that you will not spread what I tell you to anyone beyond this room."
"As you wish."
"Very well. In public church doctrine we teach that Mikik slew Eldiloth after killing Owena and Haldir, the gods over Min and Duam. We do not preach the particulars of these murders under the guise of ignorance or the scantiness of the ancient record. In truth, however, we have precise information on how Mikik planned and implemented these evil deeds, thanks to a dissenter in Mikik's ranks who refused at the last to participate in Eldiloth's death."
"Haldimar,"
the Shalane said quietly, but not quietly enough. The Padres near her gasped in shock.
"How do you know that name, Shalane?" Aethon said, eyes wide. "It is the deepest secret."
"I have spoken to him," she said. "I do not care to share the particulars at this time, other than to say that he showed me the manner of Eldiloth's death."
"Fascinating, but you must tell us more. That he still lives, and would show himself to you after all this time, is extraordinary, and may lend us some knowledge we can use."
"He did not choose to see me. Please ask me no more, for I will say nothing more of it."
"Will you at least share with us what he showed you?"
The Shalane acquiesced and related the vision to them. Quills dashed over hastily shuffled parchments as she spoke.
"What I sensed that he wished me to learn was the difference between the wholeness and virtue of Kihol before Eldiloth's death in contrast to what it is now," the Shalane continued. "He also wanted to impress upon me the horror of what Mikik had done to a being who was kind, just, and divine. It is something I will not forget."
"Thank you, Highness, for this favour," Aethon said. "And we urge you to reconsider telling us the rest, though I will not press you now. What you have seen is the key to the first secret. The world knows that there are three great powers, Triss, Min, and Duam. What Mikik knew was that there is a fourth, blood. After Aldebar forsook his master, he sank into despair. In an attempt to atone for what he had done, he wrote every detail of the magic worked by his master in pursuit of his twisted ambition. That book lies in the chest against the wall there, under some of the strongest magical protections placed upon any object in this world. The second secret, and the one that most particularly is of concern to us, is that blood holds the power to both utterly destroy, what we would call annihilation, and to revive or unite soul and body together again. Of course, Mikik was interested in the former, while we are concerned with the latter. The third secret Aldemar revealed was that the blood of the several races was not of equal strength. The blood of gods held more power than that of the Milim Eri. The Milim Eri more than the elves. The elves more than dwarves. The dwarves more than the race of men. Lastly, the principle of seven. To utterly destroy another being or to return a soul to the body requires the blood of seven willing victims of the same race, or 70 of the next lower race in power of blood. Thus Mikkik brought 70 of the Mikkik Dun to the glade that day for his spell. It is Aldemar's dissension, we believe, that prevented Eldaloth from total annihilation that day.
So will you petition for 7 willing victims to die so that Chatan might live?
Perhaps the Elderfair, the Shalane asked, a knot forming in her stomach. Not precisely, for there is a complication. Chatan, while in race a human, has unique blood that lends him the ability to manipulate Triss magic. If we wish to revive him to his body with that ability, we have to find humans who also possess that gift. There is only one of those we know of, and you know well who that is.
Jen,
the Shalane felt a sudden shiver. Precisely.
But there is only one, the Shalane said. You need 7. And not only that, you need a willing victim. I doubt Jen would qualify.
We need the blood of 7, or in this case, 1 bled 7 times. As for his willingness, I expect you to aid us there. You will heal him so that he may be bled, and you will speak with him to gain his consent. She shook her head.
This is madness. You don't even know if this will work, do you? Did I not make my regard for Jen plain? How could I, in good conscience, ask him to submit to this?
Aethon strode straight for her chair, pulled it roughly around, and forced his gaze upon her.
How can you not? I'm not asking him to die. I need his blood. The rest of our bargain will remain as you stipulated it. The prophecy is teetering on the brink of failure, and if you care about this world at all, you must lend us your support. If the prophecy is true, then the child in your belly will need its father to survive the coming battle whenever it falls upon us. There is another complication as well. Jen escaped from his captors 2 weeks ago. While I believe he will seek you out anyway, we must ensure that he will. I apologize, Your Grace, for the need to do what we are about to do. It grieves us, but he must hasten here. Every day Chatan is absent only causes more unrest and doubt. We must have an end to this.
What thrill the Shalane felt at learning of Jen's freedom evaporated at Aethon's unexplained solution to drive him to her.
Are you saying you are to do something to me to goad him onward?
Yes, Shalane. We know that the bond between you allows him to know where you are and what pains you may be suffering. While we could not let you suffer and endanger the child, we have a way to let your body feel the pain, but in a way that you will not sense it. I'm sure that sounds strange, but you must trust me. I will not let harm come to Jen if you aid us in bringing him here to attempt to raise Chatan.
She squirmed uncomfortably. I doubt I have much choice. I do not think it wise of you to let him think that you have harmed me. He will seek me out without your intervention. If you value your lives, leave me alone. Where did he escape?
At the portal gate to Tenswater on his way to Muir Eldaloth, Aethon reported. We were taking him there for detention and interrogation. The column fell prey to some powerful magic, no doubt worked by some of your mother's associates. The Council of Padres agreed that he would be a fool to attempt to come to you here, thus our recommendation to add some incentive to convince him to make the attempt. While I understand your objections to the plan, even you would admit that you cannot guarantee his arrival, and we must, therefore, create our own insurance. Before she could object, Aethon closed his eyes momentarily and incanted. At once her mind seemed to disconnect from her body and float on a pleasant breeze outside of the dark room. Dimly, she recognized Padre Nolan standing and beginning his spell. Somewhere outside the euphoric haze of her mind, she was aware that every nerve of her body shot through with staggering pain. It lasted only a few seconds, and almost as soon as it had started, it ended. Her capacities returned, and she stood, taking stock of herself.
I object to being used in this way. How dare you work your magic upon me without my permission? And what of the child?
I apologize for the necessity, Highness, Aethon said unapologetically. You must see that it is for the greater good. We took precautions not to harm the child. You need not fear.
I will not do this again, she stated firmly. When Jen arrives, I must be permitted to talk with him alone if you wish me to convince him to go along with your plan. I don't wish to see any of you before that time.
She left the council, muttering and whispering behind her. She would not be their tool. Fuming, she made short work of the walk back to her quarters, where a pacing Mina bit her lip in anticipation of her return.
What news, Shelling? Her handmaiden asked, once the door was shut. Much. But first I need to get a message to my mother. Can you do that? It will be difficult, but I will try. Good.